Welcome to Beyond Leading, the podcast that cuts through the noise to get real about leadership, team dynamics, personal growth, and the messy, brilliant reality of work, life, and everything in between. Each episode brings grounded insights, sharp truths, and honest conversations with experienced leaders and coaches as we explore what it really takes to lead well today. We don't deal in one-size-fits-all answers. We spark ideas, offer grounded perspectives, and create space for you to work out what fits your world. So let's get into it. Welcome back to Beyond Leading. I'm Alec Pearson, and today I'm joined by Tiffany Bernard and Nick Sellers for a conversation that sits at the heart of modern working life: identity, values, and reputation. We explore how identity is shaped over time, how values quietly guide the decisions we make, and how reputation is formed through the eyes of others, often in ways we don't fully realize. You'll hear stories about navigating new roles, the difference between who we think we are and who we become at work, and why alignment between values and environment matters more than most people admit. If you've never paused to consider who you are, what you stand for, or how others experience you, this episode gives you a reflective starting point. So let's kick off. First one, identity, who you are as a leader. Who would like to come in on that part?
I think identity is something that is built over years of experience. We develop our identity from the good leaders that we've had, probably more so from the bad leaders that we've had as well. We know what effect they've had on us. And as a result, we know how we want to then show up for the others that we lead in the future. So I think identity is something that is forever growing, forever changing, and forever being influenced by external figures.
Is it just an internal thing? Is it what we possess and what we mold into shape and our identity?
That's a good question. I think all of them actually are, maybe apart from reputation, but identity and values for me are intrinsically linked. And I think they are internal. Values are what drives who we are. It also drives what we're looking for in a workplace. It drives how we want our team to be. So it's really at the center of how we do most everything that we do. And I think our identity is also based on that.
Yeah. And as you were talking a moment ago, Tiffany, I was trying to identify how values would differ from identity. But I think that there is that very clear link. What we know as coaches is that goals, values, beliefs have to align for us to remove friction from what we're attempting to do. And I think identity is something, let's say, that describes us, but it's something that's built on what's within.
You know, I'm smiling because when Alec and I did our coach training together, we were asked, and I can't remember at which stage it was, we were asked a question. And the question was, who are you? And I had a very visceral reaction to this question. It really quite upset me. And it made me angry. I thought it was a stupid question. I was like, I know who I am. What a stupid, what a waste of time this exercise is. But once I'd calmed down and actually started reading it, I realized that fundamentally, I didn't actually know who I was. So I didn't know what my identity was. I didn't know what my values were. It may sound like an excuse. However, I'm the firstborn and I was brought up as a boy, if you want, in the sort of traditional terms. My father had always raised me to take over from him and to follow in his footsteps. And I was going to go to school and go to university and study hotel management and take over the family hotel. And that's what my life was. And I never questioned it. And I did exactly that until I decided to change to business management because I didn't like my hotel management tutor. But that's a whole different story. And so my whole life was mapped out. I then met my first husband when I was very young. So that also molded a little bit what I thought my identity was and my values were. And by the time I asked this question, I'd probably been a widow for about 10 years. And it was the first time I actually started thinking about who I was. And I've realized from coaching that there's a lot of people who actually never do that. We move from I should to I have to, all of these things, from one step to another, without ever questioning them and without ever actually identifying where we stand in any of it.
That's a very challenging statement that you've just made. But I think it's absolutely true. When I'm working with clients, I often ask them, what feeds your soul? Mm-hmm. We have to understand ourselves to be able to answer a question like that. So when somebody asks us, who are you? We've probably never given it any thought. We've just been carried along on the current of life's events, life's activities, life's expectations, mm-hmm. without really stopping and actually realizing what makes us tick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very true. And I often do the values exercise with my clients and they're like, oh, my top values are, and without exception, is loyalty, professionalism, and integrity. Okay, those are great values to have, but really, are they yours? Are they your top values? And when you dive into it, you get all sorts of things. You get authenticity, you get freedom, you get adventure. So it is a question that's worth asking.
Yeah.
But I wonder, just from a leadership perspective here, one of the things I'm seeing quite a lot of with clients is those leaders that are just new into the role. And there is, when you move in or you move into a leadership role, your identity has now changed because it's different. What you're going to be doing, the tasks you're going to be doing, managing people, you might be doing much more strategic work. That's changed. That's what's expected. But typically, because, and linking back to what we've just been talking about there, we don't realize this has to change, and we're still doing the job that we were doing before the promotion. And I see a lot of that. Like, we stick to tasks that make us feel useful. We think, oh, I've always done that, and I love doing that. That's, go back to your point, Nick, that feeds my soul. And I say to them, but why are you doing that anymore? That's not your role. And we forget.
So I'm going to get pokey here, Alec. When you take on a new role, has your identity actually changed, or have the expectations of you changed?
I think your identity has changed because you're now doing something different.
Even if you're still doing the same thing as before.
But if you're doing a new role, and I love this, you're not doing the same things you've done before. You've got to realize there's a shift. We can't cling on. We're holding on to what the past was because our identity is probably stuck then and we haven't refreshed the identity.
So in this new role, our identity inevitably will change because it has to, because we've got new responsibilities. Okay, so does that mean that our values inevitably change as well?
Oh, now that's a great question, because I've been quite fortunate to work with clients kind of late 20s over the years, and they're now into the kind of mid 30s, and their values are shifting. Age, experience, what we like, what we don't like does shift. And there was actually one client I had, and I'll never forget this. They took another job. They said, it's time for me to leave where I'm working now. And they actually said, my values no longer align with the company values. I loved that awareness. Absolutely loved it. And to be fair, this client has now moved on to a new role. She's thriving because it fits her values. It's oozing out. That the alignment is fantastic.
But to make a decision like that requires a fair degree of maturity.
And awareness.
And awareness, yes, exactly.
Awareness, yeah.
I need to draw the conversation back 30 seconds or so. Because we talked about people in a new role and therefore a change of identity and then an emerging change of values. Are we talking about what I've heard called the magic weekend? The weekend where you finish the job that you had and then on Monday you start the new job and instantly you're qualified. No, that doesn't happen, does it? We need to work our way up in the new role If we'd taken a promotion for the same company, we might understand the culture and the network, but actually now there's a whole set of responsibilities that have just changed. And to your point, Alec, about clinging to the things that are familiar to us because we really quite like doing them, that can be very dangerous when we get a promotion or a move. When we go start with a new company in a more senior position, we're actually taking on a new culture, a new environment, and a new role. And we're not instantly ready for all of that. So the whole question about identity and values, I think, ends up getting thrown up in the air a bit, because we're having to navigate a whole kind of newness.
Yeah, but I would argue that the way that we navigate that newness is going to lie in our values, because those values are what drive us. Those values are what drive our decisions. They drive our outlook. They drive our reactions to different situations, to people, to how we handle change.
So if we think back to identity, is the problem that some of us have by moving our identity forward or changing it, depending on what we're doing, particularly as a leader, is this actually about making sure that our identity proves our values? So we've been promoted up to a leader. We still want to do what we did before we're a leader because we want to prove we can do the job. We want to prove our value to the business. But my argument is, how you prove your value has to change because you're now a leader. And maybe over a period of time, that's what starts to reshape some of your values, because the identity has had to change.
I'm hearing a very strong tie between identity and job title.
I'm thinking leader. I'm just coming in with the leader's hat, not so much job title, but the role as a leader.
Okay, but so now the thing is, when I think about identity, when we meet new people, we often say, so what do you do? Where we're fundamentally asking them for what they believe their identity is. And you're going to have some people who are like, oh, I'm a financial officer. And you have other people who go, I need a team of blah, 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 and we do X, Y, Z. And that's more of a sort of rounded identity. And I remember that when we were doing our coaching, we were told that coaching is not something you do, it's something you are. Hmm. And so that's, for me, that's the difference between like identity and job.
Ah, okay. So do we then have to break identity down into personal identity and career identity?
I'm feeling particularly strepherous today, so I'm going to say, is there a difference?
Your identity from a non-work perspective, who you are, is one identity, and who you are in work is your career identity. And maybe your career identity has to change, or we have to reflect on it. We have to think what our career identity is today. If we get promoted into a leadership role, that career identity has to change, has to adapt, because what we used to do, theoretically, on a lot of occasions, we're not doing that anymore. We've got new things to do. So our career identity is going to have to change. Maybe personally, we don't change. I remember I was like this, and I know others are as well. Before I went to the office, so I'm traveling to the office, I'm me, right? I'm Alec, and that's who I am, and just my personality. But as soon as I got to the door, I knew I changed, because I'm now in work mode. I am now in work identity or career identity. I felt different and I acted differently.
Which one of them was the false one?
No, I know, that's just me, I've got two identities. One that's non-work related and one that's work related, because I am different.
This sounds like a bit of a Cold War thriller coming out. We've got a double agent.
I have to say that I'm struggling with the idea that our identities change purely because we're changing the job we do. Because I do believe that, again, we come back to the values, and I believe that those mold our identities. For me, an identity is something that's far more internal, intrinsic, and intangible than a job description. And I would take my identity, who I am, thanks to the little thing I did, I know who that is. But I would take that and I would apply it to the new role. And the way that I would approach that new role would depend on my values and my identity.
Okay, let me add another perspective to this. And again, challenge me on this. If I think about a leader, and we're just looking at career identity, as a leader, particularly when I become a senior leader or become an exec, typically, I'm going to have to be much more assertive. Typically, I'm going to have to influence more. Typically, I'm going to have to do things in a very different way than I might have done earlier in my career. But this is just my perspective. When I think about when I was moving up the ranks, me as a person had to be different. Because how I performed as a leader, and I was a nice leader, looked after my staff, and that was all good. I wasn't horrible. But it wasn't who I was out of work. I was very different out of work. So I had two different identities. And still Tiffany doesn't believe me because I can't hear.
No, because I'm laughing because I can see that Nick's going, so that means he's horrible out of work.
But as a leader, I've got more responsibility. I need things done. The way I think has got to be different, what I do. But I'm probably, and this is me, I know I'm very work. Work drives me. It's always been the case. When I'm at home, I'm not as driven. It's very different.
So if we had this conversation with your other half and with your children, would they be agreeing with you or would they be painting a picture of, oh, Dad's always getting on at me or Alex always pushing me to complete this? And you think that you're milder and they're actually thinking, you may see yourself as milder, but we still just see you as a light version of the work, Alec.
I'd have to go and ask them.
When you were speaking, Alec, there was something that did come to my mind, and it's one client that I have has noticed that he's less patient at home. And I think that maybe that is not a different identity. It's a question of, and I think when we go to work, when we are that leader, we believe that people have certain expectations of us. And when we go home, those expectations are different and we maybe have expectations of others. And I think that also ties in with you're at work, you have the stress because you have that role of responsibility, because you are being more patient, you're being more inclusive, you're being more caring, because you feel that's what your role requires, that when you get home, you're tired. By definition, it is, to your point, Nick, is maybe the same, but a little bit more exaggerated at home.
I don't know whether either of you have ever undertaken the Insights Discovery instrument. No, shake of the heads. Very, very worthwhile taking a look at. The company I worked for previously invested for the senior management team in doing this around the globe. And it was quite remarkable because it paints a picture of you. But it paints a picture of you at work and a picture of you at home. And there is a difference between the two. So I was maybe a little bit playing somebody's advocate when Alec was talking about different identities, because actually I think we do behave differently in the workplace and at home. I'm not sure I'd go as far as to say our identity changes, but our behavior does. And opposite to what Tiffany just said, I become much more red in character, so much more directive and assertive in the workplace. At home, I'm much more likely to go with the flow, be easygoing. I'm off duty, I'm relaxed, I'll get done what needs to get done. So I think that there are differences, and by virtue of that, there are going to be differences in, I'm not going to lead us into the reputation part of this conversation just yet, but reputations are different as a result. Mm-hmm. Because the reputation is the external view of us, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head with behavior. I think it's the behavior that's different.
If we link back to what I said into the introduction of this podcast, because I said identity is about who we are at the core, the roles we choose to play. So that links in. So I'm going to stick to this. I can argue I've got a personal identity and the career identity, but maybe the career identity is I'm playing it out. It's a role I am playing and it continually evolves.
And that does take us back to what we were talking about, a person starting a new role. That the role that they were in, they played that role perfectly well, so much so that they got the new job, they got the promotion, whatever. But the role that they move into is not that old role. And it comes with a different set of responsibilities. And yeah. So how they turn up, how they manifest themselves will be quite different. It could actually even be a mistake to just be the person that they were in the old role in the new role, because it may be that they won't be seen to be stepping up. No. They may not be seen to be assertive enough, directive enough, decisive enough, and all of that.
So behavior has to change.
Right.
But I still believe that our behavior is based on who we identify as and what our values are.
But the change in behavior, I think, comes from the difference in expectations that are placed mm-hmm. on us.
Yeah.
The behavior is driven by who we are, yes, but also by those external circumstances that drive a change.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what about values then? Values are what we stand for. It's our DNA. This link, intrinsic link to identity. Tiffany, you mentioned it earlier. What are we now taking from what we've said to now link this into values then and understand this link further?
I've worked with so many people that say, I don't know, I just feel off. I can't put my finger on it. Everything's fine, but there's just, but feeling physically off. And digging into it, they find out that in fact, their values are being compromised, or they're being asked to compromise their values, or they're being asked to bend their values, or their values no longer, as you mentioned the thing, Alec, are no longer in alignment with the corporate values. Or they joined a company believing that the values were X, Y, Z, and they found out that in fact, that's not the case. When we're living out of alignment with our values, we feel kinked somehow and it's not comfortable. And it really doesn't allow us to show up as the best version of ourselves, because we're constantly battling to try and find that alignment again, that balance. So I think values are what we look for in everything around us. So the Hogan Assessment is very interesting because it does come up with values, morals, values, and beliefs and preferences are very central to one third of the whole assessment. So if you have a value of tradition, for example, okay, you're not going to work well in these new age workplaces where you've got beanbags on the floors and hammocks hanging off the ceilings. And the opposite is true as well. If you are not traditional, you're not going to work well in the bank in an old family-owned establishment. The values are what we search for in our family life, in our social life, in our work life. We need these values to be reflected or supported. So I think that they are very fundamental in everything we do. And understanding what they are can often shed light in why it is that we're feeling stuck, or why it is that we're feeling like physically a little bit out of sorts.
But how many of us are guilty of saying, if we asked someone, tell us your top 3-4 values, and they would rhyme off the values, but actually their behavior is different.
And this is interesting because the exercise that I do has a list of, I don't know, I think it's 30-something values. Some of them are a little bit woo. Most of them are good. And there's two columns. So the first column is, how important is it to you? And the second column is, how, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being not very much and 10 being a lot, how does it show up in your life? And that is very important, because if we say, for example, that adventure is one of our top values, okay, adventure and freedom, let's say, top two, and they're not showing up in our life at all, that's going to give us a good indication that we're feeling choked, suffocated, stuck. And then you can go on to figuring out where in your life you're feeling those things. Is it at work? Is it in your social life? Is it in your family life? But when you ask somebody to reel off the top three, as I said, it will come out and be like professionalism, loyalty, and integrity. But when you look at what values are, another one that comes up often is family. Okay, but what if you really get down to what is important to you? What are those things? Connection to nature, for example. I have one client I work with in Singapore, and they realize their connection to nature is super important to them because there simply isn't any. Understanding what values are as a whole, I think, is also very important.
I think values also are not things that, again, going back to that question about what feeds your soul, I don't think many people really give much thought to what they value until ask the question or until something comes along that really grates on them. And then they realize that something's out of sync. But when we talk about values, I guess it does require us to really dig deep and actually get under the skin of what really makes us as an individual tick.
Yeah. And even when something grates on us, we might identify the action or the situation that grates, but not the value that's being compromised.
Right.
So by default then, when we've got our identity, we live our values, we're true to ourselves, are we saying then that automatically drives our reputation? So it's something we don't have to really think about. It's because we're doing it anyway.
I think we need to define reputation first.
Okay.
For me, reputation is how others see us.
Yes.
Not how we see ourselves.
Definitely.
It's going back to what you said in the intro, is what people say when you're not in the room. And I think it's not up to us. I think our reputation is a combination of our identity, of our values, of how we show up, of how we treat others, how we live our lives. Others are the ones who judge that.
However, if we have a good reputation with others, again, with a leadership hat on, does that not influence whether people trust us, follow us, back our decisions?
What is our reputation built on? The question is, what do we have a reputation for? Is our reputation for being the party animal, being the last out of the bar? Is our reputation for being on time and accurate with reports? What is the reputation? I think Tiffany's question was very appropriate, that what is the reputation built upon? Because reputations are built upon something. When we first meet somebody, we might give them a few brownie points on the credit side in the bank balance, but they can trash those the first time they open their mouth, or they can start to add more brownie points to the bank balance.
And I think it's very important, because there was a situation where somebody was starting with a new leader and they were a little bit concerned because the leader's reputation preceded them. And it was not one that kind of fit with their values. All right. So now we're 2 months down the line, they get on like a house on fire, because that reputation is a judgment through the perception of others. So now, just to add to the question, your reputation, Nick, as seen by me, is probably different to your reputation as seen by Alec.
Very probably. And actually, in connection with that, how often have you been in a meeting and, say it was a presentation you were giving, and somebody says to you, how did it go? My inclination is always to say, I'm not the person to ask. You need to ask other people that were in the room. How did it come across to them? Because for me, the delivery was great. I got everything across that I wanted to get across. Whether the audience appreciated it or not is how my reputation is seen.
Absolutely.
Because everyone interprets something differently.
Of course. And the word value comes back in. Reputation is built on, what do people see as valuable in us? Is that willingness to be on time valuable in us? Is that willingness to just drop everything and start playing the piano and drinking champagne? What is it that's valuable in us? How is our reputation built? What brought it together in other people's eyes?
I've learned now, never judge a book by its cover. So many times I've got it wrong. I look at someone, I'm making an assumption, or interpret who they are, and then I'm wrong. So my reputation of others is built over a period of time. Then I can start to think, yeah, I'm starting to see consistency. I know what they're like. I can feel a better judge on that.
And I'm sure that their reputation in your eyes is being built on your values.
Ah, true. So if I was sitting here as a biker with my leathers and being maybe 50 or 100 pounds overweight and all of that, your first impression of me would not be, this guy is obviously an executive coach.
Yeah, but that's an impression. It's not the reputation. The reputation would be, what have we heard about you?
But then what you'd heard about me is that he's 100 pounds overweight, he's a biker, he's often out with his mates at the weekend. That's all the stuff before you've met me. What you see in front of you bears out what you've heard. So that reputation was starting to form potentially before you got into a conversation. You might have even thought, because I'm a biker, I'm a bit thick, or that I'll only talk about Harley Davidsons or something along those lines. But then you get into a conversation and actually find out that I like growing apples.
And eating toast with honey and butter.
And eating toast with honey, thank you.
It is interesting, the interplay between identity, values, reputation, interpretations, impressions. And I think it's interesting that we've put values in between identity and reputation, because I really do think that values are central to everything, because values do drive our impression of other people. They do drive how we judge other people. And you mentioned trust, Alec, and it's interesting because trust is based on four pillars. And the pillars, those pillars are care of something other than oneself, mm-hmm. sincerity, reliability, and competence.
Yeah.
Okay. So somebody's reputation, I believe, is going to be built probably around those four pillars that make up trust. But how one person judges someone as sincere and how another one judges as sincere, again, is going to be very different due to that perception, which is based on their values.
That is such an important point, Tiffany, because perception really is everything, isn't it? And I think what is interesting is that generations or different generations, what they see as sincerity or integrity might look very different to the next. And I do wonder, is this where leadership is now? In terms of what I mean by that is that identity, values, and reputation than they've ever been. And if we think, and there's something really interesting that I'm certainly noticing, I use an assessment called Clifton Strengths with my clients. And I'm starting to see that the Clifton Strengths talents and strengths that come through in the report, particularly of Gen Z and young women, we're seeing a real rise in relationship building strengths. So typically their default is to have more empathy, more harmony. They want to include people. And is that telling us that going forward, that leadership is really moving towards connection and collaboration and more emotional intelligence rather than hierarchy and control?
100%. I think that leadership has been changing over the last few years now towards that emotional intelligence, towards that whole person. Whereas before you had a work person and a home person, and now you've got this whole person idea.
Yes.
And also, I think that not the values have changed, but I think the values that were important traditionally or historically are no longer important now. So those values of being the strong alpha male, you know, being that kind of very decisive person, being the one who, you know, takes charge, that's no longer as important today. Today is more important to be collaborative, to listen to people, to look to include people, to allow them to be part of the process.
I think in the past, what has happened is deciders wanted people just to get behind and go with the decision they'd taken. There was a kind of an attitude that I'm older, I'm more experienced, I'm more mature, I'm more senior. And that would lead to everybody gets behind me and we go with this, even if it's going to be a disaster. Today, we find that people are much more likely to want to have a conversation about things before that decision is agreed upon. And again, even the decision being agreed upon is different in terms of the decision maker taking the decision. So I guess where I'm going with that is that it feels as though there's a lot more collaboration, and quite rightly, because even junior members of staff with fewer years under their belt, they have eyes and ears, they have a brain, they see what's going on, and if they feel comfortable, they will make comments about what they see and whether it fits with what we said we were going to do, and isn't this going to leave out people or whatever.
And those young people want to be part of the process, they want to be included. And also had an interesting conversation with a young lady about respect. Now, when we were brought up, we were told that we had to earn respect. The Gen Zers now, the millennials, the Gen Zers believe that respect should be given, And it's up to them to keep that respect. So we started off with zero and we had to work out. They think that they're starting off with 100 and it's up to them to maintain that. So it's an interesting way of looking at it and not entirely wrong. I don't think that there's necessarily a problem with that because, as you said, they have their own ideas, they have their own opinions, and those are of value.
And I suppose when it comes to identity, values, reputation, these are built on something. And so we have to have something under our belt. Otherwise, there's no foundation for our identity, our values, or our reputation. And so maybe maybe our values don't change over time, for example, but we become more clear about why we hold those values. Our reputation isn't something that we have developed in one sense. Our reputation is how other people see us. And this all just takes time. And if we have a bad reputation at one point in life, it doesn't mean to say that we'll always have that bad reputation, because we change our ideas about things, we move, and then our reputation goes with that move.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so to wrap, key points.
For me, I think one of the most important things for us is to know actually what our values are. I think if we know what our values are and not those throwaway values, actually spend some time thinking about what it is that's important to you. Because once you know that, you'll be more aware of yourself and what's guiding you. And I think that is a very, very important foundation.
And for me, I would say if you've never spent any time considering your identity, values, and reputation, be prepared for this being a bit of a journey. You will not sit down with a piece of paper and be able to sketch these things out straight away and nail it immediately. You may well start writing things out, but through reflection, through conversation with others, whatever experiences, what will happen is you will become clearer about these things, but it's a conscious thing that you do. So it's a little bit of a journey, no matter what age you are, whether you're 20, whether you're 60, if you've never thought about it before, it's going to take you a little while to nail it down.
For me, and I'm thinking from a leadership perspective, what's important is to scan the horizon. And what I mean by that, think about the department you're in, think about the people you're working with, and then think, right, where do my identity, my values, and my reputations lie? Does it work? Do I need to sense check it? Do I need to update it? But think about who you're with, where you're working. And again, I use that word again, scan the horizon. The reason I'm emphasizing that is that I do come across clients that are working with leaders and it's apparent none of that's happening. But an interesting conversation the other day, and a client said to me, my boss doesn't actually know what I do, what my role is. There's a starting point, I think. And move forward from there.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. And until next time.
Next time, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Leading. If this episode was useful, follow or subscribe so you don't miss the next one and share it with someone who'd appreciate it. And if you've got a minute, a quick rating or review really helps more people find the show.